Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 14, and I am Libya, your host. And this week we have two returning guests.
Hey, it's Pete. I'm back.
And this is Ronnie from Las Vegas. Hello.
Woo! And we have a brand new lineup for this podcast with mostly summer shows and only one show from the regular season, which is a new experience for us this time. On the first things, though, we're going to talk about the news, and this week we actually have some news that I'm actually very, very excited about and been waiting to hear, and that is that Torchwood is returning, but it's returning summer 2011, so a year from now, and we have 10 new episodes coming, and it's going to be shooting in Wales, but it's supposed to be a worldwide institute. So technically speaking, they're supposed to be traveling all over the world. I am not quite sure how they're going to make Wales look like New York, but I will see what they're going to manage. But apparently Starz, because they're working with Starz, they're going to have a much bigger budget than they normally do. So that's good.
Wait, is it still Barrowman?
It's still Barrowman and Eve Miles. And so we have those two cast members, and they said they're going to hire two Americans to fill out the team so that it'll be an international team, even though with Barrowman it already seems like an international team, except, you know, he's from space. But
and his sexual proclivities are still the same.
Well, because it's going to air on Starz, here's hoping for some nudity.
Woo-hoo. Oh, that's true. But meaning he's not heterosexual only.
No. They made that very
there
clear.
There was talk before that.
Yes.
A different network.
Right, with Fox. Fox. People were pretty sure, well, we don't know, it's all rumor, that the reason that Fox turned down Torchwood was because they tried to tone down Jack Harkness. And they got, I think, people are assuming that that was a sticking point. And Starz, if you've seen Spartacus at all, you know they have no problem with that at all. So it looks like a good pairing. And I'm excited mainly because I get the star shows on my Netflix, so I don't have to worry about having to pay for a new show. So
Starz is also Party Down.
Yes, as you plug Party Down yet again.
Show, yes.
And I've been
that's Starz.
I've been trying to watch. I watched the first 5 seconds of the pilot.
Yeah.
All right. Other news.
Oh, one thing. My friend Lisa told me about this. Right now we are in the middle of the NBA Finals, and it's the Lakers versus the Celtics. And I know you're going, what the heck does this have to do? supposedly, if the series finishes at game 6 instead of game 7,
right,
that extra day, they are going to air the 2 unaired episodes of Better Off Ted. So please let this thing finish by game 6. I don't care who wins, if it's the Lakers or Celtics. I just want it over. So then this is what we heard. And I was like, oh my God, that'd be awesome. So
I actually find this hilarious. Considering you live in LA and it's like blasphemy, you're like, I don't care if the Lakers win. I just
want to
see better.
Well, I don't want to know. I don't. It's not going to be happy if they lose. But I'm more concerned with, I want to see those 2 episodes. So I was like, So you hadn't heard that. I scooped you. Like,
yes, you did.
Well, this is my friend who's a big Better Off Ted fan. She told me. So
we have
her news is correct. Yes.
We have not confirmed.
We've not confirmed. I have to check the TiVo, but that's what I'm hearing. So that would be awesome.
All right. Ronnie, you got anything?
And actually, it's not really news, but in TV Guide, they did a season finale tally of everything from deaths to births to pregnancies. And so there were 25 deaths. And Libya, this is where you need to close your ears, you know, because Lost, there were 11. And the next was like Vampire Diaries had 3, and then Grey's Anatomy had 2. But also Private Practice, Smallville, V all had different deaths. There were 13 gunshot wounds or stabbings. And the most were
sounds like a police report.
Yeah.
It does. Well, like, okay, the most gunshot wounds or stabbings were actually in Grey's Anatomy, where they had 3. They had 8 hookups, I guess, in the finale,
for Grey's Anatomy, 8 alone.
Oh no! That's
okay. I was just checking out.
Yeah, and so the 8 were like, you know, one on One Tree Hill, one on Parks and Recreations, one on Private Practice, one on The Good Wife. There were 7 breakups. There were 5 births, 4 pregnancies, one included on 30 Rock, as well as Grey's Anatomy. Well, Grey's Anatomy did a little bit of everything.
What did 30 Rock have?
30 Rock, a pregnancy.
A pregnancy?
Not
who? Who the heck got pregnant on 30 Rock?
That I said I don't watch that one.
Well, I do, and I'm like, I have no idea who's pregnant.
Wait, was there a wedding?
Oh, yes. I remember. It's Jack Donaghy's the younger girlfriend, Elizabeth Banks.
Oh, that's right. That's the big surprise at the end. She's pregnant, and that's why, and then they get engaged. Okay. I didn't pay attention.
I forgot about that. Wait, who dies? I mean, unless you care. Who died on Grey's Anatomy? I'm just curious.
This is two.
It just has a number, but it
doesn't
tell
say
you.
Who, boy or girl, right. Or doctor.
No.
I mean, clearly it's not Patrick Dempsey or.
Well, all I heard is in the finale, some patient comes in with a gun and starts shooting people.
Oh, so in theory, anybody could have gotten shot. Well, or they could get shot, but we don't know till it comes back if they lived.
Right. I'm pretty sure. I like saw a trailer and it looked like your girl.
Meredith Grey?
No, the one we
Lexi?
Like. The one we like. The main Nazi, nurse Nazi. What is her
Bailey?
Name?
Bailey?
Bailey, thank
you.
Yeah,
Bailey. Okay, yeah.
When I saw the trailer, it looked like Bailey got gut shot.
Oh.
So,
if
I actually cared
more
about the show anymore,
I
would
see it.
Yeah.
It's funny because Julia's been watching. When we sometimes when I come home and she gets home before me, I guess, I don't know if it's Lifetime or something, has been showing
the
Grey's
old
Anatomy
episodes?
Marathon. Yeah, and so it's funny because, like with Burke and everything, it's watching those. I'm just like, oh, it was a pretty good show. I was like, I forgot about these episodes. Like, but yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
Does any of us watch it now?
No.
I made it to. I think I made it further than you. You quit at like season three, and I got about partway through season four and couldn't take it anymore, something like that. So I haven't watched that show in forever. But
well,
all right,
two more numbers. There was one U.S. citizenship on NCIS.
Yes, I knew that one.
And the last one, which I thought was the funniest one, there was one trapped in hell, of course, on Supernatural.
Hey, that's
nothing.
Because Peter's about to watch season one of Supernatural.
Oh, I thought he. Oh.
No, I've never seen. I've seen the pilot,
and that's
like
all
three.
He's seen.
Yeah. So. So who's in hell? No,
don't you have a 50-50 chance? 50-50.
Sorry, I thought that was cleared. I didn't realize. Okay, I'm sorry.
Well, normally, generally speaking, it is.
No, it is. Most people have seen. I'm behind on Supernatural. So,
it's one of the many shows we're trying to get him to watch, and he's refusing. It's going to be like one of those Clockwork Orange situations where I lock him in the second.
No, range. I have it now. I'm going to watch it. I have it. I have no excuse now.
You have Lie to Me, too. How long have you had that? You have Burn Notice,
true.
Too. How long have
I'm
you had that?
I'm more curious about Supernatural because of the subject matter. All and right. I don't like Tim Roth. I know you say he's great. I'm just not a fan of him in general, and you said you understand me saying that.
I do. I just want you to give him a chance. That's all I'm saying.
All right.
And let's move on to the TV shows. On Monday, we had Lie to Me, actually, as you speak to Tim Roth.
That's a very good segue.
Yes, and that was the first show on Monday. This episode is the first episode that we've had of Lie to Me since, I think, the first week of January, the end of December, something like that. It's been on hiatus so long, it feels like a brand new season. And they're kind of treating it a little bit like a brand new season because I vaguely remember what happened at the end of the last part. It wasn't a cliffhanger or anything. But what was good is we had a nice cameo from, if you're a fan of Veronica Mars, we had Logan.
Oh.
Was the guest star of the week. And what was really interesting was he was one of those serial killers who believes that he's smarter than the authorities. And I don't know, if I was a serial killer and you tell me you have the best lie detector in the world coming to visit my school, I would not volunteer to go up against him. I would be a little more low-key.
Well, wait, is he a, is this a,
he's a world-class lie detector. Like
No, I know, that's what Tim Roth is, but is the Logan, I don't think, Logan Eccles, the actor, is the situation like, it's like, freaking Anthony Hopkins, Silence of the Lambs, where they know this person's a serial killer. He's captured and they're doing an interview?
No, it's one of those situations where he's hiding in plain sight. And he's been killing people and nobody knows it.
He volunteers to talk to him?
Because he's arrogant.
He thinks he's
smarter than everyone. And I was like, you did not go to the school of Dexter. You know?
So I'm like, why would you do that?
Exactly. That's my point. And he plays the character really well. He's really, He really, because no one has been able to read past his mask, so he thinks no one can. So
he's also read his Tim Roth character's book, and so he knows all about this. You know what I mean? He knows how to lie.
So he thinks he can get away with it. Author on the show?
Well, yeah, he writes all these books about...
So he's kind of famous.
He's very famous. Right. Like, everybody knows who he is. He, like, if you want to hire him, it's like $1 million. You know, so he goes to the school to give a guest lecture and says that he can detect anybody lying, and Logan's like, I volunteer, I bet you can't tell if I'm lying. Hmm. And he reads him and realizes that this guy, he actually tells the truth twice. And what he tells the truth about lets Lightman know that this guy's a psychopath. He's like, this dude is a complete sociopath. He was disgusted by the picture of a regular girl, and he was aroused by a picture of torture. And that let him know that he was like, this guy is a serial killer. We need to watch him. And then next thing you know, this guy's got FBI following him. He's got all this stuff and attention that he never would have had if he had just sat in the back of the class. You know, and he basically thinks that he can pit his wits up against Lightman because he's never faced anybody.
Is the show like? Is it like The Closer where it's Tim Roth in a box in the room? No. Is that how they do it?
They do on occasion. But a lot of times he'll go out to wherever the person is. But if it's like a prisoner, because sometimes they need to interrogate a prisoner, then they'll bring him to the office and they have a
cameras.
Yeah, okay. And so he'll film the person and go back and look at the footage and look for micro expressions and things like that.
Okay.
So it's kind of interesting. I like it just because I feel like you learn a lot. It's very educational. And of course, the big romance they have on the show, they put a big roadblock on this episode, which I actually found a little bit annoying because it didn't feel like it was exactly natural, because it's like Lightman's old professor that slept with him while he was in her class warns the woman that is actually like the romantic interest, warns her, oh, stay away from Lightman, he'll just bring you down. I was like, you took advantage of him when you were his teacher. Are you really the right person to give me advice about him? So I really...
And she also slept with the serial killer.
Yeah, and she slept with the serial killer.
Just a minor point, you know?
Yeah, and that's why she didn't believe Lightman at first, because she was like, oh, you're just jealous that I'm sleeping with this guy. He goes, really? No. That's not the issue. So, you know, I just felt like using her as a source of advice was... If she came to the conclusion on her own that she didn't want to be close to him and get involved with him, that's fine. Because this is now... She was married all through first season, and now she's not married. So they actually have an opportunity to do something. Now all of a sudden she's like, oh, well, his ex-teacher girlfriend told me that he's a bad guy. I'm like, she's known him for like, what, 15, 20 years? Some ridiculous long period of time. And she's known him longer than the teacher has. So I think if she's going to make a decision about whether to get close to him or not, she should make it. Versus listening to this random woman she just met. So that was just annoying.
This was actually my first time watching Lie to Me, and I actually really enjoyed it. Because, again, you learn so much because they go through and explain to you some of the lies or what you do. It makes me want to be a little bit more cautious when I'm around people, you know?
Well, it teaches you how to read people, too. So you could be having a conversation with somebody, and you're like, oh, that was a flash of contempt. You're like, oh, they don't like me very much. You know, yeah, it really allows you to read people's faces, which, I mean, you kind of have to be conscious of it. I would hate to be like Lightman's character where you can't help but do it, because that makes life a little uninteresting. That's like almost being able to read people's minds, which I wouldn't want to do.
Right, because it made me think at the end where, you know, because he had asked, you know, her for dinner, and where she says, well, no, I have stuff to do. It's like, well, does he know that she's lying?
Of course,
you know,
he knows that she's lying. But, you know, they have their rule where they never call each other on their lies. I like that rule. They have, because the two of them are the partners or kind of own the company, and they've known each other so long, their rule is they never call each other out on their lies.
That's
right, this is your first episode. That's one of their rules.
Yes.
Because, yes, he knew she was lying, and based on the rule, he can't say anything to her.
He just has to let it go.
And in first season, when she was married, her husband was lying to her constantly because he was cheating on her. And he could tell, but he couldn't say anything to her. Because he was pretty sure she could tell, too. But he, based on the rules, he's not allowed to say anything.
Oh, okay.
So, but rule only applies to the two of them. Like, he can call out his employees, like Loker and the other woman. He can call all of them out. But okay. The rule only applies to the two main characters. They are not allowed to call each other on their lies. So, anyway, I hope you go to Hulu and watch some of the other back episodes or whatever. I think you'd enjoy
it. I will do that.
All right, let's move on to Good Guys. As I said last week, the reason I started watching this was because of Bradley Whitford, which I blame entirely on you, Peter, since you got me to watch West Wing, and now I'm a big fan. And what I have to say is character is different, obviously, than Josh. But it's like...
Just a wee bit.
He's like the cheesy older uncle version of Josh. He's basically a guy who's stuck in the 70s. He thinks that computers are strange. He doesn't trust them at all. His version of police work is to run into the building and, you know, yell freeze and whatever. And his partner is, of course, the straight man, who's played by
Colin Hanks.
Straight guy. He's the big techie. He knows how to do everything. But the dialogue, if you just listen to them talk, it's hilarious. Just because, you know, like, this week's episode was a good example where they don't have... Basically, Colin Hanks' job is to babysit Whitford's character. Because Whitford saved the governor's son, like, 20 years ago. And because of that, he can't be fired. But he's a drunk. He is... kind of a complete loser, except that he really wants to be a really good cop. So that's like the weird thing about it. But he shows up to work drunk all the time. He sleeps with witnesses. He maneuvers himself into bed with anybody he can. And he thinks that his porn mustache is sexy. And it's really not.
Who produces the show?
The guy named Matt Nix. He's the same guy who does Burn Notice. Same creator.
Oh, okay.
So it's got the same kind of witty... Actually, it's more of a comedy than a drama. Like, Burn Notice is a drama with comedy. I'd say this show is a comedy with a little bit of drama. Hmm. And they, like, because nobody takes the two of them seriously, they're both technically detectives, but they send them on stuff like, someone stole my humidifier, and two detectives show up to find it. Like, that's crazy. Hmm. But because they don't really have no one in the department, they're like blacklisted in the department. They get the crappy jobs. But because he does serious police work and keeps following clues, because he's sure that every case he has is a huge case, and ironically, they end up being huge cases by the time he finishes because a normal cop would be like, oh, you lost your humidifier. Oh, well. And then do the paperwork and leave it alone. He'll keep going. And then I think in the pilot, he followed the humidifier until he ended up finding drugs, $4 million worth of drugs and money from a cartel. So it was like, and he ended up, you know, it was like a huge case. This week's episode, they go for a busted streetlight. And, you know, they figure that no one's going to do anything about it. But they figure out that the busted streetlights have to do with a car stealing ring. And it leads to this huge international consortium of car thieves that are selling cars to Europe. And there's all this, and there's murder, and there's a bad cop, and it all gets complicated. And I actually like the editing thing that they do where...
Okay. I was going to ask you about that, Livia.
Oh, about how they do the editing?
Right, how they go... Or I think it's really cool how they go back, like, in time, frame by frame.
Right, it's really pretty cool. It's like... Instead of, say you come out of the commercial, and instead of being exactly where you were when you left, you know, when you went to commercial, you'll be like 5 minutes further ahead in the story. And you'll be like, what the heck? And then it'll be like 5 minutes earlier. It goes, and then back, you go back 5 minutes until you catch back up to where you were. And they do that all the time.
Why do they do it?
It's just it's kind of the convention or the flavor of the show that's kind of... That's kind of how they've set up it's stylized. It's like how
so every episode's like that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I like how they do it because it gets your attention without doing the whole cheesy 48 hours earlier, you know, like...
Right, which so many shows did for a while.
Right, but this is actually... They do it all the time throughout the episode itself. So instead of, like, you following the story in a straight linear fashion, you're following it mostly linear, but then you'll jump ahead, be confused, and then they'll back you up, and then you catch back up. And they do that about, I'd say, 3 or 4 times per episode.
Huh.
And it's pretty cool. And I like the little effect that they have to let you know you're going backwards in time and stuff.
Definitely. And one thing I really enjoyed about this episode is that the guy who ended up being the con man the last episode, they're starting to use him as an informant now.
Yeah, they're going to get him killed, though.
And this time, because it's like at the precinct, like they don't give him any resources. So they wanted to follow this car. And the only way they could figure out to follow, to be able to trace the car is to use the GPS on the guy who, has it, because he's under house arrest. So he has GPS.
An anklet. So they literally put the guy in the trunk.
Trunk.
So that they could follow his anklet and use, instead of low-jacking the car like most people would do,
right.
They put this guy in the trunk and followed his GPS. But of course, it all goes pear-shaped because our guy, Bradley Whitfield, doesn't know... Which forts are.
Computers.
He doesn't know how to use computers and starts searching porn and crashes the computer. And the guy was like, you've downloaded a virus I have to clean. And he's like, computers can't get sick. He's like, yes, they can. You have now crashed it. And he was like, well, get it something. Let's get some medicine to fix the computer. And I was like, he was like, let's blow its nose or do something. It was the craziest dialogue I've ever heard talking about a computer. And then at the end, when he has to go track his partner, because now his partner's gone and he's got the bright anklet on, he's like yelling at the computer, like, tell me where my partner is. And the criminal is like, yeah, that's not going to work. and he pulls his gun like he's going to shoot the computer unless it tells him something. And then the con guy's like, yeah, give me a second. And he actually gets on the computer, finds the guy. And what's great is he needs something to pry down the, the pedal in a car to make the car go through a window. And he's like, I finally have a use for the computer. He takes the computer and braces it on the pedal. That was great. So the only thing that's a little unbelievable is that I really can't believe that anybody who works at the police department can not know computers as well as he doesn't. Like, that's a little unbelievable. But because the show is kind of like one step out of reality anyway, based on kind of the way they do the show, it's okay. And you buy it.
It works, you know?
And it's really funny, and I highly recommend it.
Definitely.
And Bradley is playing a completely different character, except every once in a while when he does his little eyebrow things, where it's something that Josh used to do on The West Wing.
Okay.
And he has this little, like when he's surprised or something, his eyebrows just kind of go up and he just kind of stares at you for a second. And I used to love that when Josh did it, and he totally does it on this show.
Huh.
So I'm like, I'm good. I like it.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to Glee.
Finale.
Go for it.
I liked it. I think I had heard a few. I watched it, I think, 2 days later, or no, maybe a day off or something like that. So I heard a few grumblings, but I liked it overall. I did feel like, what's the rivals group?
Vocaloid.
So they're New Directions.
Right.
So, wait. So, it's just a recap. So, the big finale was, is it the regionals or nationals? Is that what it is?
It's regionals.
Whole season has been leading to
regionals.
That.
Okay.
New Directions, which is the people that we follow, they need to win the regionals or their program gets canceled.
Right.
And then you'd have no season 2. So, I think you had commented on this too. Early on, maybe 20 minutes into the episode, they start basically singing, and you're kind of like, well, there's no way this is going to take an hour. So you said that you assumed either that they were going to win or not win because you were like, well, this is so early. It's not like we're going to wait for the last song, 5 minutes left, that they win, that's
right.
The end of the
show. Well, I predicted that they were going to lose based on how early they were doing the songs. And I would like to say I was correct.
You were correct. I thought that... I don't know, this is just a weird thing for me, I obviously I've never been in a, well actually I kind of was in a glee group in high school, but that's a podcast for another day. But in a glee competition, which I've never been in, I keep wondering. The show is very big on like, oh, okay, so they're going to be doing Journey songs, but then they find out that their rivals are also doing Journey. And they find that out when they're actually at the thing. Because they're like, oh, look, they're doing Journey also.
Yeah, that was the mid-season finale.
In the real world, I keep wondering if it would be that way. Because
no, you can't
if you're an audience, I don't want to see five bands do the same song. So I don't think it would be like that.
Well, the reason that happened at the finale, the mid-season finale, was because Sue gave out their playlist to the other schools.
Oh, that's right.
That's why
that threw off their
right, that
plan.
Threw them off. Right. This time, that's not what happened. They had completely different songs. Because the odds of you doing the same song as somebody else, there's so many songs. It's really
not when it's a super popular song though. That's what I was thinking. Maybe not Journey, but like a Lady Gaga. Don't you think a bunch of Glee bands would probably want to do it? Like that's why I'm like, you probably should submit your songs at least to some pool, and they'd be like, all right, well, look, we've already got three Gaga songs. You can't have...
No, I was in a marching band, and we've had it where we've performed songs that another band does the same song.
It just seems weird.
It is weird, like, yeah. But it happens, and you just deal with it. And then it's a matter of, we have to do the song better. Actually, sometimes it's good, because you're doing the exact same song, and it's just a matter of who does it better. And that way you can really see who does it better.
I don't know, because that's what I was wondering when I was watching it. I was like, would it really be like that? But
yeah, sometimes it is.
But so they do a Journey medley, and then Vocal Adrenaline does Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody, which I love that song, coming to Rock Band 3, by the way. But I got to say, it's a really tricky song to pull off, because Freddie Mercury has such an amazing, powerful voice. Even though I think the guy from Vocal Adrenaline, the Rachel ex-boyfriend guy, I don't think he's a bad singer, but he's not Freddie Mercury. And I just thought, I was like, he can't pull it off. Like, however, I thought the production value of Vocal Adrenaline, I did think they were better than New Directions. I was like, it's better.
One of the things I noticed is mainly it looks better because they have more people. They have more guys and more people, and so because of that, they can do more with their dances and stuff. And they have New Directions. They have Arnie, who's in the wheelchair, so there's only certain things they can't
do. And also, I sometimes think that New Directions is, and I think this would be it could be a Ryan Murphy, but I don't think it's Ryan. I mean, it could be Ryan Murphy in real life, but I think we're supposed to think it's a Schuster thing, which is that a lot of times I think the New Directions songs almost always end up being some kind of song where, even if it's not a ballad, what they've done is they've made it where Rachel and who's the bland?
Quinn.
Is it Quinn or Finn?
Finn.
So Finn and Rachel end up kind of singing to each other.
Because
and it gets
think
tiring
it's,
after
yeah,
a while.
Cause
I like that Vocal Adrenaline, it's not really about that. Like, he's the main singer, but you still have all these different ways of playing it up, which makes me think, well, their Vocal Adrenaline is singing for the crowd. They're not just singing these two people to each other. And I think that's much better.
Well,
so
the other,
like that kind of
the
me.
Other problem is Finn is not a very good singer.
Well, there's that too.
So she's Rachel's good.
Yeah, she's good.
And it makes sense that she has the lead. But Mercedes is just as good as her. And I actually find it...
Well, they deal with that on the show.
Well, they deal with it in that they say, yes, Mercedes is good, but Rachel is better. And I'm like, no, she's not. I don't know if I think
Rachel's better.
I don't, but I'm saying on the show that's what they say. They say the reason that Rachel gets all the leads is because Mercedes is good, but Rachel is better. They say Rachel can always out-sing Mercedes, and I'm like, no, she can't. So I really don't think that because if you're in a glee club, you want to show that you have talent pool. You don't want to say you only have one singer.
Right.
Because
what if the singer's gone that day?
And I think splitting up the songs is great. And I think Kurt is a better singer than Finn. And
oh, yeah. Kurt's fantastic.
And that's my point. And he didn't get to sing the lead at all during the whole thing. So I was a little like, really? You're going to have... And I understand he technically is a bigger character on the show, that Finn's a bigger character on the show. I get that, but he's nowhere near as interesting as Kurt. He's not as good a singer as Kurt. I don't understand why he's...
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think most people I know likely agree.
And he's actually not that good looking.
I'm just going to stop with my Finn hating. I also think that... Well, I don't hate Finn. I mean, I didn't like him in that episode where he... faggoty thing or whatever. Like, I didn't like that. But in general, whatchamacallit, what was that the episode? That was the episode where the dad had the great speech.
Right.
I love that speech. Anyways, so... yeah, I think most people I know that are fans of Glee usually say their favorite characters are like, basically, I guess we would think of as the supporting characters.
Right.
But that happens a lot of times with TV shows. Like, just Grey's Anatomy, the show that, like, most people don't really like, Meredith and...
McDreamy.
It's more that they like all the supporting people. Like, so, maybe that's just a television thing with these type of shows. But
not always. Sometimes you have a show where the lead is actually really strong, and they're the reason you watch. Well,
those are shows like... House, Dexter, Closer, where that is very much about the main character.
Yeah.
I guess I meant more of an ensemble show. Like,
there are ensemble shows that I still think that that's true.
I mean, actually, Josh is great on West Wing.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Right.
Yes, I don't think he's the lead, though. I know
I mean, I go back and forth on that, but it's an ensemble. But anyways, getting back to the Glee finale. Sorry.
Yes.
The Glee finale, so basically it comes down to that we see that Sue's been made a judge early in the episode, and of course everyone's freaked out about that, and at the end of the episode... We see that Sue actually votes for New Directions.
This is where I have issues.
And Olivia Newton-John and two other celebrity judges, Josh Groban and somebody else, they have their different reasons. Olivia Newton-John was in Glee earlier in the season.
Right.
I wasn't quite sure. One, even though I do like Olivia Newton-John as iconic 70s actress... I'm not sure if it was a right move for her to suddenly play this villain character, because now we're supposed to believe that, like, it's all about her, and, like, she can't believe that there weren't enough Olivia Newton-John songs. And I was like, I don't know.
And you think that's going to hurt her career?
No, it's not going to hurt her career, but I just didn't...
What?
I didn't find it that interesting, and it was... I think the point was supposed to be these people are bigger celebrities than Sue. Sue is kind of a celebrity in her world, and they're completely like making trashing her. And I felt bad for Sue, but yeah, I don't know. And I mean, I think this is leading into what you're going to say. Like, I'm just not sure if that.
Ronnie's trying to speak. Go ahead, Ronnie.
Oh,
yeah, no, I was going to say with the whole Olivia Newton-John, I liked it because she always has this, you know, sort of persona of being so sweet and nice. So it was fun to see her not being that way.
Well,
I agree in theory. I just don't. Then I don't know if I thought Olivia Newton-John pulled it off in an interesting way.
I was gonna say my main issue is during the whole scene where all the other celebrities, because I really don't think those guys are celebrities either, when they trash Sue, and then all of a sudden she's like, "Oh, I feel how like it is to be downtrodden, so therefore I'm gonna vote for New Directions." I call shenanigans.
Yeah, I just don't know if she would do that.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it at all. And I don't believe that she would sit there and let them just trash her like that either. Like, she just shut up. They just all were like, "You're not a real celebrity. You don't belong here. Blah, 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 blah. You're just, we're going to go to L.A. and you're just going to sit here, whatever." And she just sat there and took it and then was like, "Oh, I guess I'll vote for New Directions now." Like, no. No, she wouldn't have done that at all.
But of course, that something like that has to happen because obviously there's going to be a season two.
Right.
So something has to happen to...
I agree that something has to happen, but I should believe it.
I agree. There was an episode a few weeks ago when the Kurt and them decide they're in the Cheerios?
Yes.
They're in the Cheerios, and they decide to do the song they want or something like that, and it's not what Sue wants. And at the end, there's a reporter, and the reporter is like, "Well, Sue, I totally thought you didn't have heart, and I thought you were cold, but I have to admit, that production was fantastic." And then there's this moment... where you're about to see Sue's reaction. And I was like, "Oh, this will be great," because Sue has such an ego that she's going to be like, "That wasn't my plan. Like, you know, I hate that kind of stuff." But she didn't. She was just like, "Oh, that's great and wonderful." And I was like, "Really? I don't think Sue would do that." Like, so there's things like that. Sue's my favorite character. Probably, she's probably the best written character on the show. But they do cheapen her out sometimes where they push the story along so that she'll do something where I'm like, "What?
That's out of character."
I don't think Sue would do that. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, I agree.
And because she's the best defined character, I feel like you can make that statement. You can be like, "Sue would never do that."
I agree. You can take that chance because it is Sue.
Right.
Right, yeah.
And
I agree.
There's the only time that I think they've changed her character in a way that I thought was believable when they introduced her sister.
I did like that.
And
that was good.
Worked.
I thought that was all right.
Yeah, I think that totally
worked.
Well,
also, it's backstory.
Right.
So it's kind of like, okay, well, this has been connected to her whole life. We just didn't see it. So that's fine. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, and I think that worked, but...
And actually, this was the first time I've watched Glee. Thank you, TV, you know, Campfire, because it it helped me to expand my horizon. So actually, I really enjoyed it. But see, I don't know all the characters and everything else because it was the first time watching it. And what I really enjoyed was how they juxtaposed the Bohemian Rhapsody with The Birth. I thought they did a really good job of going back and forth with that.
I didn't mind it.
I thought it was pretty cool.
I was nervous that Quinn was going to keep the baby. I was like, oh, please don't pull that move. Like, which they didn't. They ended up... Oh, it's another shenanigans. Well, not... Wait, shenanigans... is shenanigans a...
You're asking me to define the word?
Yeah, is shenanigans when a character does something you don't believe, or shenanigans relate to anything in the real world? Or
you,
like,
can,
what
you,
is,
can, you can
because
do anything in the real world.
I don't think... At this point... Wouldn't there probably be a family waiting for that baby?
Oh, but
and then she's just kind of like, I'll just give the baby to this person over here.
It's
not a product. You can't just give it a... Like, that felt weird to me.
Well, that felt a little weird, except the fact that her original arrangement was to give it to Schuster's wife, remember? That's who she had the arrangement with.
That's true.
And that fell through. So
that
she
didn't fall through.
She didn't really have anybody after that. That was the entire plan. Was
okay,
all
right. Because, yeah, that was my thing where I was like, well, I don't think you can just give babies away, even if it's... Like, if you keep the baby, that's of course. But the whole, like, hey, why don't you take the baby? Like, because you were successful but never got to have a baby. So now you've got your own baby. And I was like, what? Like,
that was cheesy. I agree.
So you're saying that's not shenanigan.
That
it's
was
just
cheesy.
It's just
when
silly.
I say that shenanigans, that's like something I don't believe would have happened.
So in this, you believe, yeah, the characters, they would probably do something like that.
But it was just...
It's
I
just
thought,
corny.
It was corny, yeah.
Okay.
And false a little.
So I would say a good finale for a very mixed first season of Glee, but I mean, I like Glee, so it's not like the first season of Lost or anything, but I mean, I like it. It's a good show. I like the characters, so I will be back for season two.
And by the way, just so that everyone out there knows that Peter compares everything to the first season of Lost, no matter what.
And the pilots. Anytime Livia gives me a pilot to watch, my reaction is always,
is it as good as the first season of Lost? And I'm always
or the pilot. And you're like, the pilot of Lost is the most expensive pilot ever. Like, you can't keep comparing it to Lost.
And if it's a 30-minute comedy, is it as good as Lost? Like, no, it's not. It's not. I don't think I've ever given you a pilot of anything and been like, this is as good as Lost. You should wait for me to say that. You need to wait for that.
Now, Peter, now that's what I would call shenanigans.
How's that shenanigans?
Go. Yeah, well, how is that shenanigans? Explain.
Huh? It's shenanigans because it's not, because it doesn't make sense. You can't compare everything.
Oh, I see. Okay. So I'm like, it's not out of my character. That's exactly who I am, man. Like, but yeah, no, Bolivia's right. I am always, and it's weird because I don't even think Lost is the most perfect show. I have a lot of problems with Lost, but the first season is pretty freaking good.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
It's a really solid first season. So.
Yeah.
But all right, go ahead.
All right, so let's go on to the next show, which is In Plain Sight.
Yes.
In Plain Sight.
I thought it was a really good episode. Oh.
Plain Sight's the woman from West Wing.
Yeah, Mary
McCormick. And
yes.
I saw the pilot, and I didn't... It's weird, because you were saying you think she's playing the same character. I didn't like her as much, at least in the pilot. But I liked her on West Wing.
I said she's playing a similar character, except if you gave her a gun and a marshal's badge and told her to go out and kick people's doors in. That's the difference. But she's a very strong woman who's very independent. But
she's got the cheesy white trash family.
That's the drawback.
I didn't like that. At least in the pilots. I didn't like that.
And you won't like it for all the first season. because the cheesy sidekick family are so annoying. And if you just fast forward through those bits, you'll be totally fine. The actual show where she's actually doing her job is really good.
Well, now, Ronnie, this
right.
is... Olivia just brought
up something.
And that's
what I was going to say about this week. Oh, you know, is that it was really interesting because, like, the main witness this week has... I can't say it right. Asperger syndrome?
Yes.
Asperger's.
I'm sorry.
Like
that's
that.
What it is. Asperger's. And it was just really interesting because here's a woman who, you know, who can't relate to people... with Mary, who can't relate to people. And Mary had to kind of pull back her snarkiness to try to get this woman to do the right thing. And so I really enjoyed the episode and the interaction, especially between Mary and this woman, and how does Mary deal with this woman who doesn't understand people, you know?
Right, well, Mary has issues with people as well, which is why people pointed out that they actually had more in common than anybody else. But I knew that this was going to go sideways. As soon as Mary kept trying to explain to her, she's like, oh, Larry's my friend. And she's like, well, you know, once you finish testifying, he won't be your friend anymore. And I was like, oh, don't tell her that. I was like, that's going to be a problem. And of course, it's once she gets into court and does her first day of testimony, and then Larry's all mad at her. She's like, but we're friends. How come he's mad at me? How come we're not friends? He said we're friends. And then she's like, well, he's mad because you testified. And I was like, and then, of course, she's like, well, I don't want to testify if Larry's going to be mad at me. And of course, the case goes downhill from there. But right. I did think that it was an interesting thing that one of the criminals was totally just using her. The other guy who was her friend actually kind of was and kind of wasn't. Like, he actually didn't want to hurt her, but he did care about himself more than her. But then when really given the choice, he still helped her. You know what right. I mean? So he sort of was her friend, except to be fair, I don't think I would send an assassin after you, Peter. even if, because the choice was he was going to go to jail or they were going to have to kill her. And he didn't want to kill her, but the other guy was like, well, we got to do it or we're going to go to jail. And he's like, well, you know, all right. He's like, as long as I don't have to do it. But then as soon as somebody said, is someone going to kill her? Where is she? He immediately said where she was because he really didn't want her to die. So he was a little sketchy on the moral stance there as far as best friends go. Because in my book, a best friend is there trying to stop the assassin. You know, so regardless of whether they go to jail or not. So that was, so I would actually, I guess I would put him in the non-friend category.
Definitely. And like you had said earlier, I don't buy the whole new brother thing.
Oh my God.
That is so annoying.
The only thing is, I thought the only advantage was that by them adding new family members was at first I was like, well, maybe he's not as big of a loser as the rest of her family. Like, her mom's a drunk who they actually fixed. She went to like rehab and got better, and now her mom's not a drunk anymore. And so her mom is actually halfway interesting now. So I was like, okay, they fixed her mom. They got rid of her boyfriend, who I thought was boring. So, okay, they fixed that. Yes. The sister has been problematic since day one, and the best time that we've dealt with Brand, she wasn't that bad in season two, but season three, you know, they just basically sent her off somewhere on a secret mission, and I was like, she's great there on her secret mission because she's not here.
Right, but it never made any sense. Yeah, that it whole, never, you know, going away.
Yeah, I personally think she went and got a lot of cosmetic surgery because her chest is now 10 times bigger than it was, and her face looks weird now. So she obviously went and got some sort of surgery, and I'm like, ooh, that did not make you look better.
No.
But now they have another brother. Actually, they have a whole other family, but we've seen the other sister, who actually I liked her because she seemed to have it together. But now they've got another little brother, and at first the little brother seems like he's okay, but of course he's going to be as big a loser as the rest of them. And I'm like, oh my God, why? Why must you introduce all these losers in her family so that she can get away from them? And I'm just like, if I was her, man, I'd just cut them all loose. Because they are just so freaking annoying. And this was the first episode in a long time where I've really been annoyed with her family. I mean, in the first season, I was annoyed with her family a lot, but they did a lot to fix that. And so I've been more like, oh, this show's pretty good, it's very even, and the family's fine, and blah, blah, blah. But this episode was the first one where I couldn't stand her family again. So that's a little disappointing. But hopefully the brother will go away. And it looks like they're setting it up to where Brandy is going to be like, oh, big sister, you were right. The brother is a loser. I'm sorry I doubted you. Blah, 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 blah. Because if I was her, you know, he's like, well, you know, you earned this $10,000 working with me. And then he comes up to her. He's like, oh, I need that $10,000 back. And I'm like, no, it's my money now and my account. I don't owe you anything. He's like, well, I needed to fix my business. No, because she had the idea to start her own business, which I think is good. And I don't see how he can press her into giving him the $10,000 back because it's now her money. So that's a very quick conflict for me. End of discussion. Yeah, so whatever.
Well, you know, they need to move away from that. And if anything, I like it that they bring Mary's boss into it more, Stan.
Oh, yeah, Stan's like great. Yeah, I like him.
He is. And if anything, give him more screen time, you know?
Oh, and also another West Wing person got added to the cast, CJ. She's on the West Wing. She's on Allison Janney. Yeah, thank you, Allison Janney. She is guest starring on In Plain Sight. She's been on like 3 episodes so far.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm liking that. And they have, of course, the two of them don't like each other, her and McCormick. They have conflicts, but it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. I like it.
Allison Janney is in she was in another big show, but I'm not going to tell you. It'll be a surprise.
Let's just move on.
But she...
Oh!
She's in another...
Thank you for spoiling that for me, because I just figured it out. Yes, I do. The only one you're not supposed to talk to me about.
I don't know what you're talking about.
All right, anyway.
I wanted to say something, in case our millions of listeners... I would love to hear feedback on this, because Libby and I were arguing about this, and it just came up in plain sight. Libya was finishing The West Wing, and she was not having a good time with the last few seasons. We will do a podcast all about The West Wing with my lovely wife also, because she's a big fan. But one thing I wanted to throw out there, see what Ronnie thinks and what people listening think. If you have a show you like, and you're into it and you're watching it, where does that line come in where you say, I would rather fast forward these scenes because I don't like these characters versus, but I like this show, so even if I don't like this, I should still suffer through this. The only show that I think I started not liking that pushed me to the fast forward was the last season of 24, where I was like, okay, I'm starting to fast forward this. But in general, I really feel like I'm betraying the show if I fast forward, even if it's a character I hate. Like, but you don't seem to have as big of a deal with that.
I don't have an issue,
like,
with that. If I'm at the point where...
Because what if you missed something important? What if something
I'll figure it out.
Right.
You know, if it's important, you will figure it out, you know, that something's going on. Wow. But I'm just saying, from my point of view, let me give my side. My side for The West Wing was I was at the point where I was ready to be done. I was ready to hit stop and just give the DVDs back. But because I heard that, you know, the end is really good, blah, 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 I wanted to get to the end. And so that was my choice. I mean...
You're right. No, I'm just curious what other people think of that.
Like, okay,
that
Ronnie, idea. You but get to tell us your opinion.
I was going to say, just what we were talking about, In Plain Sight. I will, you know, I mean, because I tend to watch everything. I'm, you know, kind of like, I tend to like it all. But in Plain Sight, I would fast forward to the brother scenes because it doesn't add anything to the story. But typically, I'm trying to think if there was anything else where I would fast forward through scenes just to at least get the main gist of it. And typically not, but I'm at the point in Plain Sight that I would do it for that.
Yeah, I was tempted to fast forward the brother. I didn't because he was getting on my nerves, but hadn't, or maybe I was just too lazy to reach for the remote. I've done it for Caprica.
What?
Did you
fast forward?
No, I don't tend to do that, but
in Caprica, it's the storyline with the wife.
Yeah, that wasn't that good.
Yeah,
I didn't fast forward it though.
Yeah, it was the whole storyline with the wife and the creepy principal
lady, yeah.
And her dead brother. And I was like, I so don't care. This has nothing to do with the story. And every time I'd see the two of them on screen, I'd hit fast forward. And as far as I know, I didn't miss anything. So, oh well, you know.
I was just curious to see what people think of that.
Yeah, but Peter, typically, no, I don't. Cause I'll just watch it through anyway. But I think I'm getting more choosy now. And it's like, this is storyline, this part of the story is going nowhere. It's not giving me any information, so I don't want to see it. You know what I mean? And so why not fast forward through it?
I know.
You know?
I get the logic. It just feels weird to me because I'm kind of like, it depends. If I'm talking about a show I don't really care about, then I guess you're right. It wouldn't matter. But like, it was kind of depressing to me when I did it on 24 because I had liked 24 for such a long time. That it depressed me that the show had gotten to a point where I'm like, I just don't care anymore.
And that's the point. Okay, let's keep going. Burn Notice had their second episode this week, and it was the introduction of a brand new character, Jesse Porter. And I have to say, on the hunk status, he's pretty high. I approve.
I agree.
He gets the thumbs up for hunk status. I think he's going to be an interesting addition, though what's weird is he's kind of like the male version a fee. Like, you know, he doesn't think. He's very much about, you know, guns blazing first. He doesn't listen to instructions. Except Fee's gotten to the point where she does follow the plan. You know, if you give her the plan, she'll do the plan exactly.
Is that the
but
girl?
It took her a while to get there, you know?
Yeah, it did and take her a while.
Right, but I think that's an interesting point. I didn't think of him being the male version of her, which will be interesting because of the tensions that are starting to build between the two of them. will be interesting how they develop it to make Michael jealous or what will happen with that, you know?
I think he will be jealous because she's been eyeing him pretty hard, and I don't blame her.
Yes.
But I think that that's going to be a problem because Michael's plans, when he executes them, are very precise. You have to pretty much do, for his plans to go off, you know, perfectly, you have to do exactly what he tells you to do, when he tells you to do it exactly, or people will get hurt. And this guy seems to think that he's James Bond and doesn't need anybody. And it's going to be really difficult for him to join in with the team and work with the team. And I guess that's the drama of this season,
right,
is to fold him in. And I'm sure he's going to screw up several times and probably almost get himself killed. But of course, the best part of the episode is the very end when Michael offers to let him join the team. And we all know as the audience that Michael's the one who burned this guy. Mm-hmm. And he's like, at the very end, he said, well, if I'm part of your team or whatever, you have to know that I'm going to follow the trail to the end. Even if I would get unburned or whatever, I'm following the trail to find out who burned me, and I'm going to kill that guy. And he said, are you okay with that? And Michael's like, yeah. You know, because...
Why didn't he tell him?
Well, because the guy will kill him if he tells him.
Yeah, isn't there a reason why he burned him? Isn't there a good explanation?
Yeah, well, he was looking for some information. He hacked into a computer to look for some information, and he ended up hacking into that dude's records. He didn't know who the guy was. It was completely random. He needed the information. He hacked in, and the way he hacked in ended up pointing to Jesse, and it wasn't on purpose. It wasn't malicious. He didn't pick Jesse out of a lineup and be like, I want to hit this guy. It was just, it was perfectly, and actually I think what we're going to find out is the codes or whatever he used, probably the guy who played Uriel from Supernatural, I can't think of his name.
Yes.
He probably actually does want to target.
Vaughn.
Yes, Vaughn, right.
Right.
He probably
a vampire
does,
name, right?
The vampire name,
of course.
Exactly. he probably does want to target Jesse for some reason. We just don't know what it is. But as far as Michael knows, Michael didn't do it on purpose. And he felt bad about it. He got the guy out of jail. He got the guy out of danger. He feels responsible for it. But Jesse's not going to care because he's been a spy for 8 to 10. He's 8 years. He's been a spy, and now he has no money, no job, no whatever. And he thinks that whoever did it, even if they didn't do it on purpose, it was like, oh man, it wasn't personal. You're still going to be mad about it. And because he's a spy, his first reaction is, I'm going to kill him. And him and Michael aren't close enough yet to be like, oh, you know, we're best buddies, don't kill me. Yeah, right. They're not in that position, and he knows that. So his thing is he's going to help the guy. He needs information out of him right now, and he has to go through the slow process of trying to get the guy to trust him to get that information. I am sure the season finale will be him, you know, finding out, and then everything hits the fan. But for right now, it's kind of interesting. I like it. I think he's a good addition. It adds new energy, and though I think that him living at Michael's mom's house is a little weird, but also interesting. So at least now she has an armed guard because people are constantly breaking into her house and trying to kidnap her to hold over Michael. And now at least there's a trained CIA operative that lives in the garage. So that's useful.
Very handy, you know. And I think, like you said, I think it is going to bring a new energy because with Sam, Fee, and Michael, it becomes such a well-oiled machine.
Right.
It'll be good to have, like, you know, somebody in there to kind of mess things up or have to fix them. And so I think it is a good addition.
You're right. All right. Let's talk about Justified. It was the finale this week. So what did you think, Ronnie?
Oh, boy. It was a mind blower this week. My gosh. Do you want to talk about the carnage? It was incredible. But I thought it was the point well taken, but don't cross your dad. It's the main thing, you know? Jeez.
Man, I think I would have had to be done with my dad if what happened to Raylan happened to me. I think me and my dad would be done. Even after he shot him, he still, like, patched up the wound. I might have had to let him bleed, you know? Yeah.
This is very true, you know? Oh, my gosh. And so it was just a very intense episode, but I really enjoyed watching it and, you know, sort of in bringing it to the climax, you know?
Right. So it was called Bulletville, and I'm assuming it was a double entendre, meaning the city that they ended up going to at the end, and also all the number of bodies that hit the ground, which were a lot.
Definitely.
I thought it was action-packed. It was good. It didn't actually deal with the girlfriend versus the ex-wife. Well, I mean, it touched on it because the ex-wife was like, oh, I left my husband. I got to talk to you. And he's like, And then the girlfriend, she ends up getting kidnapped, right?
Yes.
And yes. I actually, my only problem with her whole kidnapping is every time someone shows up at her doorstop, she walks outside with her shotgun. No, stay in the house. If they come in your house, you shoot them with the shotgun. You don't leave your house to where you're more vulnerable.
That's a very good point. You know, stay inside.
Yeah.
If they come in, then do something. Otherwise, yeah, because everybody keeps showing up at her house anyway. She should know this by now.
Right, and she keeps coming out on the porch. And, of course, they're like, oh, it's Raylan. We need your help or whatever. So, of course, she comes rushing out, and then they hit her upside the head with a gun. But, I mean, granted, they brought, like, four guys to take her. So that means at least she's doing a good job of defending herself to where they felt like they needed four guys to take her down. So right. I gave her points for that. And then, of course, the cousin gets gut shot. So we don't know if he's dead or not. I kind of like him. So I kind of don't want him to die. But, of course, the big news is the bond or teaming up of Raylan and the Crowder. Like, that was pretty impressive. I really like that.
Right.
It's Boyd, right?
Boyd, yes.
Yeah, because the father's Bo. So right. I really like the two of them working together. That was really interesting. And then he asked him the question about, you know, what he believes in God and all that other stuff. And I always thought the whole religion was a crock, but apparently not. Like, he really was upset that his men died, and he really was having a crisis of faith, and it made him a much more interesting character.
It is. I think he's the most interesting character because you don't know what to think, you know, because he goes off into so many different directions. And here he is, like you said, he actually had more, you know, sort of faith than you would think. I thought he was just using all of this for his own means, but right. He had more faith than I realized that came out when everything was taken away from him.
Right.
Yes.
So, yeah, I thought that was great. That was
definitely
good use. And I'm glad that he'll be back next season. And Raylan really doesn't have any friends, and it would be interesting to see him and Boyd become friends. I mean, they used to be friends. They used to be friends when they were kids or whatever, but it's an interesting thing where when Boyd says, you know, you're the only friend I have. That actually made me a little misty. I was like, oh. So.
Oh, my gosh. But definitely good series.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to Stargate Universe. We had the pilot, not the pilot, the finale. And I watched it immediately before the podcast. And I mean, there were a lot of guns. Actually, a couple people died. But for some reason, it really felt like not much happened between when it started and when it ended. Okay, granted, the last, 5 or 10 minutes, a lot of stuff happened, but for the first 30, it felt like nothing was happening.
And the interesting thing is I watched the episode before together with this one. So I watched it all together, and I had to go back and say, okay, where did this episode start? And I was surprised about that too. It's like a lot of the stuff that I was thinking happened in the last hour actually happened last week. And it's like, oh my gosh, they really didn't move it along that much. But at the same time, it got so confusing, too, because there were so many going back and forth between the Lucian Alliance and what they were going to do.
Right.
The thing that I thought was really interesting is when they finally decided to go ahead and make broker the deal, where you give us our four hostages, your four hostages, and we'll give you four back. The way that the Lucian Alliance double-crossed them to give one of the dead guys back, you know?
Yeah, that kind of sucked.
Oh, wow.
And then at the very end, where their plan was to surrender but not to surrender and have some secondary plan, I was like, that's going to go pear-shaped. And the problem is, once you surrender, your options of trying to take the ship back are very, very difficult. Because you've given up all your guns. And the very end where they have all the military guys surrounded in a room and they're about to execute them all, if this was a different show, I would actually be tense and a little bit afraid for those guys, but because it's Stargate Universe, I'm like, all right, none of these guys are gonna get killed. Though I have to say, the guy playing Young, I can't think of his name, he's doing a really good job. Like, I really believe him. I feel his emotion. And the scene where they're making everybody kneel before they get shot, he's like, if you're going to shoot me, you're going to shoot me while I'm standing. You know? Mm-hmm. So that, and the look on his face was, that was really good. I mean, from an acting standpoint, he's knocking it out of the park. And the guy, you know, Rush is always knocking it out of the park. So right. I think from an acting standpoint, the heavyweights are pulling their weight. I just felt like the script, they don't make the show have enough consequences. There's not enough, you know, there's not enough at risk where I really, well, they put stuff at risk, but I don't actually believe that they're going to do anything. I don't believe they're going to kill any of the main characters at all, even though they have shot TJ and she's pregnant and that sucks. And I'm a little bit worried about whether they're going to keep, like, this might be their excuse to get rid of the baby, which would suck because I kind of wanted a baby on the ship. I thought that would have been interesting. Right. So I feel like...
But impractical, though, you know?
It is impractical, but I felt like, okay, they're changing the show. They're showing how this is all different and how this show is going to be different from any other show. So I was like, all right, they're changing the stakes, and that's great. But now they shot her in the gut, which they're going to be like, oh, well, the baby's dead. Okay. I'm not sure if I like that.
Right. But, I did enjoy it. I feel like I need to go watch it again because it was just things were going back and forth, and I didn't get the gist of everything that went on with it. Like I said, I think last week's was much more powerful than this week, even though they did end it, sort of, like you said, it's a tense point, even though you know it's going to get worked out. It's like, how are they going to, sort of pull this all together?
Right.
And the one thing that I do like is how that, you have these two, actually now there's three sides because you have the civilians, the military, now the alliance, and plus you have the ship itself. You know what I mean? Doing its own thing.
Right.
And which they don't have control. So nobody's in complete control of what's going on. And so I like the tension that brought up. But again, I think they did that better in the last episode than they did in this episode. It wasn't as strong.
Right. I agree.
I just wanted to say, I think Stargate Universe 1.5 comes out tomorrow.
Oh, on DVD?
So it must just be that, like, just like when they did 24, so that was the finale. So it's boom, it's like out in stores super fast. Now I'm kind of curious with you guys talking about it because I haven't seen it yet. But
It's good. I mean, like I said, the only
I like the actor.
Yeah, and he's good. He's the acting, great. The acting is really good. The only problem I have is the lack of tension. I feel like they keep putting their finger on the trigger and then they never kill anyone, and that's my issue. Though the last week's episode was pretty good, it made you really think they were going to start killing folks, and that was a really good episode. But all right, that's the end of Stargate Universe. Let's move on.
Oh, hey, and I just wanted to say I'm going to be going to the E3, which if anybody knows, that's the big video game expo at the Staples Center, the Convention Center in Los Angeles. Happens every year. So I will be reporting back with what I see, which I'm looking forward to. Supposedly, Nintendo has a portable DS that's 3D without glasses.
I told you I am not that excited about
that. I still want to see how it works.
Yes, I don't want to see my movies in 3D, let alone my video
games. That's true, I know. But then Project Natal and PlayStation has some movement thing. But anyways, so I'll give you my thoughts.
All right, cool. That. All right, now we're on to Doctor Who. And this week's episode we're going to talk about is The Hungry Earth, which is part one of a two-parter. And the basic premise of this is that the Doctor and Rory, they land on... they're on Earth, obviously, but I think they're in the...
And Amy.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about Amy.
I was like, Rory, why are you talking about Rory? They land on Earth in 2020?
They're in the future. It's a little bit in the future.
And at first, Rory and Amy see two people waving to them.
It's supposed to be them.
It's supposed to be them. We don't know for sure. I mean, like, I think the Doctor says it's them. Right. They never show a close-up. And they're kind of waving.
Right. And they're like, that's kind of weird. Why would they come and see themselves?
Being the Doctor Who, they somehow decide to investigate this small town.
The scientists are digging with this drill.
The super drill.
Right. That is further than it's ever been. And it's a record. And everyone's excited. And, of course, they hit a pocket of something. And it messes up the... It starts causing problems and people get sucked into the earth. Why it's called.
So people start disappearing. So there's one of them, there's a mother with her kid. The kid disappears.
The kid doesn't disappear immediately. That happens later. But I like the kid a lot.
Actually. Yeah, I like the kid. I agree.
Usually with child actors, that's not necessarily guaranteed.
Right. I agree.
So I really like the kid. And they did a good job of establishing very quickly the father-son relationship, so you actually feel something for the kid when his dad disappears. So that was all really pretty good. And, of course, the main big thing happens when Amy gets taken. And I have to say, I really like the doctor. I will reiterate that again. But what did you feel like that moment when he lost Amy's hand?
I just knew he was going to get her back. Like, I'm like, oh, of course he's going to get her back. I just don't know why they pull those moves. It's nothing to do with the actors. I'm just kind of like, of course we're going to get her. Unless this was the finale, then I'd be like, ooh. She's gonna die or something. But
right, I mean, that's true.
I was like, yeah, she'll be fine.
I meant like his reaction to her being taken. He in this episode, what I thought was interesting is it feels like he's piling all these things on his shoulders. Like Amy disappears and Rory yells at him and he takes that weight. And then for some reason he got assigned to watch the kid. I'm not sure how that happened. And then the kid gets taken and then he takes that on his shoulders and it feels like he's feeling this really heavy weight this week. And I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
Because, I mean, I feel like the doctor has the weight of the world on him all the time, but it's usually not visible. Like, this time it really felt like you could see it.
I think what's valuable about those types of scenes is that they show that he's infallible, or that he's not infallible. Because, you know, he said that, you know, hold on to me, I'm not going to let you go, I'm not going to let you go. And in the end, he can't hold on. And, of course, we know she's going to come back. But in that moment, you know, it's a loss, you know, sort of a confidence of that he can, you know, do anything. No, he can't. He can make it correct later on, but not in that moment. And so I think that if there's anything valuable, it would be that.
Well, I actually think this season they've been pressing that a little more than some of the other seasons. It feels like they're trying to press home how many mistakes he's making. He's making a lot of mistakes this season. And I think that we're going to find out at the end of the season that the cracks in the universe, the cracks in time, are his fault.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, I really feel like, and actually it would be probably David Tennant's fault, because I feel like it happened because of the End of Time, when maybe not even the End of Time, maybe even Waters of Mars. Waters of Mars, he started screwing with time. Or even maybe the Time Lords breaking out of their time-locked prison, whichever.
Right.
That's one of those two things is causing time to splinter, and now he has to fix it. And he's going to find out all these people's deaths and all this stuff is all his fault. Yeah, so I think this is like baby steps and seeing how he deals with that, which is not necessarily very well, because he looks like this episode, he looked a little like he was going to crack under the pressure, but that'll be interesting.
Definitely. But I love the alien, you know, and I the look of the lizards that they did a very good job with.
The Solarians or something like that?
I thought they looked so much like... That's from Mass Effect.
I just realized that. I was like,
that's
alien.
A Mass Effect reference. I've heard... You or somebody told me that the lizards are actually from an earlier Doctor Who.
That's what I was actually
trying to... They kind of reminded me of a 60s or 70s sci-fi type looking creature.
In the early Doctor Who... That outer mask that they had on at first before he took off that mask, that's actually what they used to look like.
Oh.
So they look like the cheesy bug-eyed aliens.
Interesting. Okay.
And so then they're like, oh, it's just a mask. And
that's
pull it
nice.
Off
that
and,
is clever.
Okay.
But I thought, I thought it was good, you know, good part one so far. I wasn't as, I think we were both kind of meh on the Amy's Choice episode.
Right.
So this was, good. You know, I was liking it.
And what about the cliffhanger when they're kind of like, you got to make sure you don't kill the prisoner?
Yes. Yes, that'll be interesting to see how that's dealt with.
Well, I mean, it's just based on how they left the tension, you know, one of them is probably going to kill the prisoner. It's just a matter of which one and why.
Right.
And you know that that's going to cause everything to go pear-shaped. But
where's this pear-shaped term coming from?
Pear-shaped comes... It's a military term.
Second time you've used this.
It's a military term. Sorry, I watch
a
lot of...
pears.
I watch a lot of...
Pears ever done to the military that they needed to be used as negative content?
Meaning, instead of stuff going in a straight line...
Then it should be a banana thing or something.
No, it's like because the pear widens out at the... It starts off straight and then it widens out, meaning like it blows up. Like your situation has totally gone pear-shaped.
Interesting.
Anyway.
Thank you for that bit of knowledge.
Yes. I'm sorry that to the listeners, you've now learned something too. Carry on.
Wait, as a side note, while we're talking about Doctor Who?
Yeah, I think Ronnie had something.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to go, like, and the one thing this is another episode where it was really kind of scary, because when they're all in the dark, you know, the bubble has gone over, you don't see the aliens at first, they're, like, darting around. Again, it's like, it's interesting how with Doctor Who, that they go for the scary, you know what I mean, and making it really kind of terrifying if you're a little kid watching it.
Well, I think Moffat's better at scares than he is at comedy, and certain other things I don't think he's as good at. But he's good at Weeping Angels are terrifying.
Oh my God.
I'd be terrified to ever go blink my eyes if I was a child. You know, like, he's good at, I think that's one of Moffat's strengths.
Oh, it definitely is. But yeah, on the other hand, the people who don't like Russell T. Davies, he does humor really well.
Yes, he does. I agree.
Moffat is all right with humor, but it's not his strength.
No, it's not. I agree. I don't think his strength. I wanted to say, as a side note, Doctor Who kind of. Don't know if there's any. I brought this up with you. This should have been in news, I guess. I think I told you that Fright Night is being remade. Fright Night is a 80s horror comedy, which I love, a little cult movie. And David Tennant is taking the role of the has-been performer, which in the original movie was Rowdy McDowell, who I think was in his like late 50s or 60s. So it's kind of interesting to see the Tennants being cast, because, I mean, while Tennant's not 20, I mean, he's got to be 30-something, right?
He's upper 30s.
But he's still a young-looking man. I mean, I'd say he's not super old.
They're reworking it. Instead of saying a washed-out actor, he's supposed to be a magician.
Yeah, he's like a washed-out magician. It's a good cast. It's like him, Colin Farrell, the guy who played Chekhov from the new Star Trek. So it's a good cast. My home movement is good. So, but anyways, Doctor Who, Tennant fans, that's something he's doing, so...
Yeah, that's true, and I'm excited that now he's doing bigger projects, because the whole reason that he left Doctor Who, I'd hate to think he left Doctor Who and then went and did nothing.
He became David Caruso for
NCI. Yeah,
CSI, ten years later.
I don't want him to be one of those actors who leaves television and then disappears because he can't get a job. I really want him to do well, and I want the whole world to know who he is. I should be his publisher. Well, actually, probably not be his publisher because I'm not very good at it. But all right, any final comments? Any thoughts about the episode or about the podcast?
Looking forward to part two, and it'll be interesting to. I think it'll be interesting to talk about our feelings of the entire season of this Doctor Who, because even though it is not technically a reboot, because it's still kind of. Been going along the lines. It is kind of a reboot because it's a new doctor and a new companion. So it'll be interesting, I think, when we finish the season to see what we think, how it all worked out.
Well, I'm going to have an all Doctor Who podcast at the end where we just literally just talk about the whole season, talk what worked, what didn't work, compare whatever, and have as many Doctor Who fans as can fit in my living room.
And it was so weird. I was at a comic book store the other day, big surprise, and I saw this big Doctor Who magazine. There's a Doctor Who Confidential magazine. It was all about Amy was on the cover, but it was all about the new season. I'm assuming this magazine's been going on for a while.
It has.
Thank
you for joining the party late.
Yes. I was like, Doctor Who's got a magazine? Like what? But
all right.
No final thoughts, except I think I really enjoy being a guest on the podcast, and let's keep it going and not allow it to go pear shaped.
Yes, I don't want to go pear-shaped either.
Nice,
I agree.
Nice use in a sentence.
Yes.
All right, so if you guys out there have any comments, remember you can send feedback to tvcampfire@gmail.com. And come back next week.
Woohoo.
Thanks, guys.